Good morning, listeners. My name's David Lewis, and I'm here with Graham Pagden here on 2CBD FM, your local community radio station here in Glen Innes and Deepwater. Many of our listeners may recall that a couple of weeks ago we spoke to Craig Bennett from Glen Innes Seven Council and also one of his counterparts there in relation to what has become a rather contentious issue within some aspects of our community relating to a feedlot development application that has been approved in the Stonehenge area. In the interest of balance, we would like to invite Graham along, who has some alternative thoughts and some alternative opinions about that particular issue. And Graham, if you don't mind, we'd love to run a few questions by you and let the community know what the other side of this particular, I hesitate to call it an argument, but the other side of this particular issue feels. How's that?
Yes, thank you.
And welcome, Graham. Now, first of all, we'd like to clarify that the development application has been approved by council. Whether rightly or wrongly is not for me to decide. But given that the DA approval is in place, we understand that from now an environmental management plan will come into place sometime later. What would you like to see as critical components in that environmental management plan?
Yes, I'll just start firstly about risk management. The least effective and the most costly form of risk mitigation is actually management practices. It is far better to eliminate risk in dealing with any sort of mitigation process. So the EMP, remember, will actually be a risk management process. So it's the least effective and the most costly form of mitigation. So my understanding of EMP is meant to go over the top of the DA. I believe in this case, and in many instances, it is going to be able to rewrite the DA, and I really find it difficult to understand how the EMP will be able to address all of the situations. For example, the effluent disposal, the DA was deficient in its design and workings. Council has admitted that by the report stating that there is now going to be a requirement for two sediment tanks. I asked the question, are there two 5 megalitre tanks, as the original one was going to be 5 megalitres, or are there two 2.5 megalitre tanks? Now that will greatly influence the design of the environmental management plan. As far as I'm concerned, this is design information which should have been in the DA and not allow the EMP to cover up the deficiencies in the DA. Another example would be the carcass composting process. The placement of the animal composting area beside the hospital pens and beside the feedlots goes against all DPI recommendations, and to me would be a rather absolutely nonsensible placement of this particular operation. According to the DPI recommendations, it's meant to be an open paddock. Workers have to wear full respirators. There has to be a decontamination area for all machinery and personnel. Again, so the DA has basically ignored the DPI recommendations here. I asked the question, can the environmental management plan actually change the location of the animal composting area? I possibly would have thought no. There's no risk assessment for the animal composting process. Does the environmental management plan actually able to address this? The landscape plan, there's reliance on the landscape plan to control the loss of amenity, so such as the visual amenity, the odour, the dust, the human disease risk, especially Q fever. My worry here is that landscapes don't occur instantly. Even though council has said that there needs to be advanced trees, there's not many native advanced trees that are like being transplanted. Do we have to wait? Do the residents have to wait 10 or 15 years for this to take effect? The other interesting point is that the DA said there was going to be tree planting on the south side of the feedlot. Council's report states that we now is required on the western side of the feedlot as well. So what about the residents in East Pandora Road, Lynch's Road, Sharman's Road, Glenlee Road? They're all to the north, so don't they count? Don't they get a buffer zone at all? DPI generally recommends that feedlots aren't in a... feedlots in high rainfall areas are not generally recommended. There are serious management issues with the high rainfall, especially with odour control, when you've got, in this area, high summer rainfall and high temperatures. So odour will be a major problem in such a high rainfall area.
Okay, understood. And there's certainly quite a few issues there that that it sounds like you are unsatisfied that were addressed in the way that they should be. So thank you for clarifying those, Graham. The council have advised residents in the immediate area during the DA process. Do you feel that there are issues for the community outside of the immediate area?
Yes, well, as I've just stated, the immediate area obviously have the concerns for amenities, such as the visual, odour, dust, noise, health. Rainwater collection is a big issue that I think the residents, close by residents, are going to face. For the broader community, it's obviously the feedlot located in the town's potable water catchment, and also potential health issues associated with that, or just travelling on roads such as Stonehenge Road. The problem I see is council have done the minimum community consultation process required. We were given 15 days to raise objection to the DA, not a very long period of time, and certainly made it extremely difficult to access professional assistance in forming our objections. The DPI, that's the Department of Primary Industry, recommends the applicant consult with the community before the DA is actually presented to the council. And of course, this is to try and appease residents, to settle the process. In this situation, that has been avoided. And we've now got the situation, we've got a large number of angry residents, a very divisive issue in the community. And I think in a small town like Leonard's, that's not particularly good for the community. The GM keeps stating that there are only a few vocal objectors. We've got an online petition at the moment that now stands at over 1,600 signatures. So I tend to refute that particular claim. We've got many comments that are being made on that online petition that the people were regular visitors. They love the drive into Glen Innes from the southern side through Stonehenge. And they really say if there's a feedlot there, then that's probably been their last visit. Council usually holds a public forum before council's meeting where residents can apply to talk to the councillors. Due to COVID-19, we were told that in lieu of this process, accepted presentations would be read out by the general manager. Unfortunately, at this meeting, the GM shut down this process, even though Mayor Carol Sparks tried to get them read out, the GM basically shuffled that aside. Now, that's a disappointment. His assumption is that all councillors had read the presentations, and that's an assumption that shouldn't be made. And it also is a public forum, so there were other people possibly listening to that particular council meeting. So they've been denied access to those presentations.
So, Graham, I understand that a number of residents are concerned about the development application process and how it was handled. Can you tell us about some of the specific concerns?
Yes, I've gone through the statement of environmental effects, which is essentially the development application. I've identified over 40 points of false, misleading, contradictory information in the development application. So I clearly see that there's inadequate information in the development application, and like the applicant's first attempt at this, it should have been returned and required more specific information. The DA contains signed false statements. So I'll read the Statement of Environmental Effects Standard form. So this is the signed form by the applicant. It's a ticker box. So will the development be visually prominent within the existing landscape? So the applicant has ticked no. Will local traffic movements and volumes be affected? The applicant has ticked no. So the question on effluent disposal, it says, will other waste be generated by this development? No. So I believe there's something like 1,000 tonnes of manure and whatever tonnes of animal composted material, and yet we've got a no tick box. Will the proposal affect the amenity of surrounding residents by overshadowing, loss of privacy, increased noise or vibration? Again, we've got a tick, a no. Will the proposal result in soil? Could the proposal result in soil contamination? No. So obviously there is a possibility. Could the proposal affect native habitat? Tick no. We've identified at least 4 threatened or endangered species that inhabit that particular area. Could the proposal disturb any Aboriginal artefacts or relics? They've ticked no. And I'll probably bring that up in a later question. The DA continues with false information. So on page 18 of the DA, it clearly states that it's over 2 kilometres to the Beardy Waters. In fact, if you look at a topographic map and measure, it's about 1.2 kilometres. There is a comment in the DA about dust. I'll read it just to make sure that this is a correct quote. Generally, dust emissions from the pens are a source of smell. So of a higher annual rainfall, central location and smaller number of cattle compared to larger feedlots, this will assist in odour control. Now, I think my five-year-old granddaughter could tell me that wet manure smells more than dry manure. In fact, if you go to DPI after rainfall, the wet pad area will produce something like between 50 and 100 times the odour associated with a dry pad. So I don't know the reason for these sorts of statements, but obviously they are misleading and, you know, completely false. I did point out these issues in my public objections and in the responses and in letters to the GM. So I've done that letter to the GM and I have a response from them, and again I will quote. So this is a letter I wrote claiming it was false and misleading information in the DA. So I quote, "Whilst the information not have been accurate, we were not influenced by it, as we always double check all measurements, and particularly this development, we undertook our own measurements as stated in the correspondence. The information therefore did not have a material impact on the assessment of the development application." Now I refute that claim because in the on page 11 of the DA, we get the first mention of a 3-hectare site. It's continued through the DA and on a number of pages. So if we go to the council's report, so this is the planning officer's report to the councils recommending that the DA be passed, and the 3-hectare site is again mentioned in something like about 10 or 12 places, and we have maps drawn outlining the 3-hectare site. If we go to the site plan in the DA, the pen area alone measures 290 metres by 150 metres. That gives us a pen area of 4.35 hectares. Now, unfortunately, 4.35 hectares doesn't fit into 3 hectares. So now we have the situation where the council could not actually tell you where the edges of this feedlot are. Now, the actual feedlot is defined not by just the pen area, but it's the area inside the bunded area around the feedlot, and that will be something like about 5 to 6 hectares. So we've actually got this situation where this feedlot, mapped by the council's report, is 3 hectares, and the real size of it is actually going to be probably twice that area. So this means, and there are many of them, any measurement that pertains to a distance from the feedlot in council's report, such as distances to residences, distances to watercourses, these would all be brought into question because we no longer have a reference point from which to actually measure. So my concern is that the GM has actually admitted that there's false information in the report, in the DA, and therefore the report, so it has been materially affected. They haven't notified councillors of the false information in the DA or the report and have allowed councillors to vote ill-informed on this particular DA.
So Graham, the information that you're talking about that was incorrect, was that included, or can you see in any way that that was included in a business paper to the councillors?
Yes, that's in the, when I say report, I'm talking about the report in the business papers to the councillors.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to clarify that for our listeners.
Now, more importantly, my worry here is that in the first page of the environmental management plans that have to be presented to the council, there is a declaration that information must not be false and misleading. It's actually a contravention of the Crimes Act. And my concern is that if the DA and the council's report is actually being used to prepare the environmental management plan, then we will continue this process of false information being perpetuated through the whole process.
The development application process included the requirement for a review of environmental factors. Now, I understand that you feel that the scope of this document requires quite a high skill level, possibly even prepared by professionals, and that the required research and reporting requires independent experts. Could you expand on this aspect for us a bit, please?
Yes, so I'll just clarify, it's not a review, it's actually a statement of environmental effects. It has to be prepared by the DA. The summary of those effects is what I read out before with the false statements in it. As I stated, there's substantial false and misleading and contradictory information. Where the council has identified inadequate information, they have referred it to the environmental management plan. We've got legal advice is that really council has a responsibility to vote on the information that's provided in the DA, and they really shouldn't be referring major things like I mentioned before, so sizes of sediment tanks and locations of the composting process onto an environmental management plan. The other interesting point about the council referring this to an environmental management plan is that it takes away the community consultation process. So if this information was actually provided in the DA, then the community could have consulted about that particular information. But by now referring it to the environmental management plan, this will now be simply go to council staff for approval, so there'll be no community consultation available. And I think we've already proven that we've been able to pull apart the two DAs that the applicant has placed in front of council so far. So that's a worrying concern. Also is a concern that it goes against, there's a lot of the information goes against DPI recommendations. So we've got the carcass composting process, we've got the nutrient management, we've got irrigation management, all of these, all of the information, there are many examples where it goes against DPI recommendations, and I think that's a major concern. The LUCA assessments, so these are the risk assessments, they were completed by the applicant. I have some expertise in risk assessment processes, and they're certainly not up to industry standards. They're all skewed in the favour of the proposal. For instance, the risk assessment for visual impact states that the likelihood of that to occur is that someone may have seen it, so it's moderate. So someone may have seen this. Now, I would have thought that it's going to be highly visual from people on the highway, anyone who lives particularly on the eastern side of the New England Highway, and all those people in the north are going to see this in their face all the time. So to me, that has to be a high. Q fever has the potential to kill people. It's not listed as a high factor. So just a couple of examples. All of the LUCA risk assessments, as I said, I feel are completely not up to industry standards. There's no odour modelling. There's no noise modelling. These should have been professional documents that supported the DA. And you know, alarmingly, the one of the professional documents that they actually got done was a traffic assessment, and the people who did the traffic assessment couldn't even tell them that the Stonehenge Road wasn't actually in a B-double approved route. So I would suggest a waste of money there. The other two very, very important things is that there has been no threatened or endangered species reports provided. And these today, if there's, doesn't take long to search Google and find out there are at least four species of threatened and endangered animals that live in this area. Probably the most significant is a native water rat in the Beardy Creek. And it may not have impacted, but it needs a report required to say that. So the just ignoring that fact is not good. I feel they've completely disrespected the Indigenous people of this community. Our understanding is that this area has quite high historical significance to the Indigenous people, and again, there should have been a report presented based on that information. So lacking in those aspects.
Okay, thank you for that, Graham. Given that this feedlot is small by comparison with larger ones that can come to mind, for example, Rangers Valley is a local feedlot that is quite large, and also that this development that we're talking about today falls below the threshold of a higher level of approval processes, to what extent have you researched the impact of feedlots of this particular size, say around 1,000 head?
Yes, so obviously the amenity issues I've covered before, and I still think we've got severe issues there. I've tried to argue in my objections that we're actually in a confining valley. I've had difficulty in getting professional people to actually state that, but we certainly get the effects of a confining valley because we get basically cold air drainage, so we get fogs and frosts from the cold air drainage. That's going to bring the odour particularly down into the valley, and it will sit there, particularly on your winter days and your autumn days. So the amenity issues are going to be there regardless, I think, of the size of the feedlot. If a cattle truck goes past on the New England Highway and I'm out walking in Surrey Park, then I will usually smell it for 10 or 15 minutes. So there will, I think, be odour. But of course, council has said we won't smell it because we're outside their buffer zones. So I'll concentrate this question basically on the potable water catchment for Glenys. There are several states where it would be illegal to operate any size feedlot within a potable water catchment. We can mount an argument that this should actually be a designated development, and that would be based on the effluent levels that it will produce. So they do exceed the levels for designated developments. We can also mount an argument that it should be an integrated development. So that would be based on the need for an indigenous report or licence, and also on the biodiversity issues. We could claim that it's an integrated development. If either of these cases existed, then again, it would not be allowed. Glenys Council seemingly in the past have failed to update LEP, so that's local environment plans, which would give protection to the subdivisions that surround this feedlot. If that had been the case, then again, it would be highly unlikely that it would have been allowed in the development. Also, Glenys seems to have neglected to have a water catchment management plan in place, and I believe Mayor Carol Sparks has actually been trying to instigate this, that has been unsuccessful. And again, most catchment management plans would not allow intensive agriculture in their areas. Graham Price, in his report to the business papers, the council report, has quoted a table from the DPI, Living and Working in Rural Areas, which highlights the distances, buffer distances needed to water courses. It also, in that table, has a factor there which says that effluent from feedlots should not be within 800 metres of a potable water catchment area. So this whole farm is in a potable water catchment area. So under that same table that Mr. Price wants to quote, then really this should not be allowed. So from that, I really think there's, you know, a large number of government organisations, professional people who have serious concerns about intensive agriculture in water catchment areas.
Now, you've raised some rather compelling arguments and certainly some issues that you would as a resident, as a local resident, like to see addressed. If all of those issues were addressed to your satisfaction, if you feel that they possibly could be, would you support the application for the development?
I think the answer has to be no, purely because I don't believe that all the issues can be addressed. As I've tried to outline, the DA contains quite inadequate and false information, and I don't believe the EMP has the power to correct all the faults that are in the DA. The going against DPI guidelines, the old SEP 30 legislation, actually it was mandated that if you went against DPI guidelines, you had to give a valid reason. So one of those sort of issues, it seems quite extraordinary for this development to have been given the approval. One other issue, there is a requirement, again, a DPI requirement, but it probably could be easily challenged in a legal situation, that the applicant legally own all the land within a buffer or separation area. And that's not the case here. So they don't legally. So the buffer area here is about 1 kilometre around the feedlot area. So you have to illegally own that. And obviously the reason is because if you own a block of land within their buffer zone and you wanted to build a house on it, then you would have the rights to build a house on it. And what happens to the feedlot? You are in a high-risk area, according to the information. You're in a high-risk area for Q fever, dust, odour, everything else. And you've got every right to build your house there. If you're a farmer and you're cattle grazing the paddocks, or if you want to build a set of yards there, your biosecurity plan is in jeopardy because you're basically having conditions put onto you by your neighbour. So it's a fairly obvious reason why you should own the area. Another concern is, and I've raised it in a lot of correspondence, you've got public roads, so Stonehenge Road, Pedlows Road is a public road. You've got Stonehenge Road as a public road, so every human or animal that travels that road is travelling within the buffer or separation distance and is being exposed to a higher level of risk in regards to things like Q fever, animal. So the whole thing is jeopardising anyone that travels that particular area. Q fever is a major problem. It's going to have to be, according to the council's report, managed in the environmental or addressed in the environmental management plan. Q fever has been known to travel 5 kilometres from feedlots in dust, and it's been known to travel one kilometre in effluent disposal, so that's irrigation systems. So obviously there's a large concern there based on that information. Personally, I think I have animal welfare concerns with feedlots. Even though I've been an agriculturalist all my life, intensive agricultural industries have always concerned me. I really think we should call them what they are, and that is animal factories. I don't believe they're farming. The current guidelines for animal welfare is that animals should be able to exhibit their natural behaviour. That means that chooks should be able to scratch in the dirt. Sheep and cattle should be able to seek water, they should be able to seek shelter, and they should be able to have and form social groups. Now, feedlots don't allow that to happen. I think many people in the country will find it quite abhorrent, the idea of locking cattle in pens and having stand in their own excrement. That idea certainly, you know, doesn't fare well, I don't think. And I think farmers generally should probably keep away from that type of activity.
Okay, Graham. Well, thank you very much for coming in and speaking to us this morning. Obviously spent quite some period of time and effort in researching your responses to our questions today, so I appreciate that and thank you. Graham, just one final question. What are the next steps from here for people who oppose this development?
We've still got several options. There is an option yet to go to the Land Environment Court. There's review processes that can be taken place. So yes, we're probably behind the eight ball in terms of the DA is already approved, but it's not a lost cause. And then of course you've got the environmental management plan has to come in. I believe the non-consultation process here is really going to hurt council, because you've got a lot of angry residents out there who are all going to be like, beady-eyed people watching this development, and council could well be spending a lot of time answering complaints, etc. Myself, I'm 3 times the separation distance from the feedlot. If I smell it, then I've got every right to complain. And council has to enforce an environmental management plan, so they may well find that they're spending a lot of resources, simply trying to police the environmental management plan.
No, fair enough. Well, Graham, again, thank you for your time this morning. Thank you, listeners, for taking the opportunity to have a listen to both sides of this issue. And from later this afternoon, both interviews, this interview that you've heard today, or may have only heard some of today, and our interview with Craig Bennett of Gleninnis 7 Council will be available on our website, so you can listen to both sides. Graham, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to reply.